This is a podcast from RTE Radio 1.
In the 17th century, William Petty's Down Survey of Ireland, by the end of that century, we had an overall picture of the country. But in the 18th century, Ireland, map making didn't really go in that direction. It was a more piecemeal affair.
One of the things that distinguishes the 18th century is that Ireland at that time was largely owned by a few thousand Protestant landlords. And it's this property characteristic that describes or defines the way in which mapping takes place during the 18th century, because these landlords want maps of their estates periodically. They want records of the boundaries of their whole estate, and they want records of their farms on the estate.
A map of the townland of Shankill, part of the barony of Uppercross, in the half-barony of Rathdown and County of Dublin, belonging to His Grace William, Lord Archbishop of Dublin. The townland of Shankill is bounded on the north by Tignic, Herrinford and Loughlinstown, on the east by Shankinock, on the south by Ballymann and Old Connacht, and on the west by Ballycorus, Barnaslingan and Frumstown.
So when we look at this map then of Shankill, there really is very little detail inside the very well-marked boundary.
Yeah, the boundary in fact is the focus of the map. And what's inside on this map is just two buildings, the church and the castle, and a statement saying that Shankill includes mountain and contains 714 acres of plantation measure.
While the map itself has very little detail, there's a very ornate cartouche at the side.
Yeah, the cartouche is the title panel for the map. It's the panel in which the map of the townland of Shankill, part of the barony of Uppercross and the half-barony of Rathdown and the county of Dublin, where all that sort of inscription is placed. And on these maps, it's quite striking that the cartouche is far more elaborate than the detail on the map itself. The cartouche, in fact, is a printed thing that is stamped on these maps, and the rest of the map then is hand-drawn. Apart from the manuscript estate maps, there's another type of map that is evident in the 18th century, and that is the map that was produced for commercial purposes, a printed map. And one of the particularly distinctive types of commercial map is the road map.
The following work is most humbly inscribed as a grateful testimony of the honour done the authors by the Honourable House of Commons in their generous grant to promote the undertaking of the only authentic survey ever made of the roads in Ireland, by Messrs. George Taylor and Andrew Skinner, with assistance from many respectable noblemen and gentlemen.
Road maps of Ireland were produced in the 1770s by George Taylor and Andrew Skinner.
They had previously worked in Scotland.
There are other road maps of England also, but road maps in Ireland were a feature of the 1770s. And probably a reflection of the increasing traffic on Irish roads in the second half of the 18th century, when there were more visitors coming to Ireland, more travellers in general, and travellers who wanted to know what their route was going to be like. These road maps are a bit like the strip maps that modern motoring organisations provide for travellers today.
And in comparison to the estate map that we looked at, this map that we have in front of us now has quite a lot of detail. We're looking at the road from Dublin to Clonus, or a section of that road, because it's printed in a book format, which obviously was for ease of carrying by the traveller.
It's an album of 288 pages of maps showing roads in different parts of Ireland. And the road from Dublin to Clonus is covered in several pages and shows possible alternative routes. These are small-scale maps in comparison with the large-scale estate maps that we've been looking at.
So between Navan and Clonus here, There's a large wooded area, for example, along the side of the road between Navan and Kells, which clearly would have been of interest to a traveller. And along an alternative route here, there are the numbers 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, etc. What are they most likely to be marking?
I think these are the mile intervals. Possibly they're milestones indicating the distance from Dublin.
And at the top of the map, also on the top of this page, we are given very precise details in terms of mileage.
Yeah, these are mileages in Irish miles, by the way, from Dublin. And they allow the traveller to calculate his journey time to know what to expect along the route. So from Knobber to Kingscourt, we see that the distance is 5 miles, 3 furlongs, and from Shercock to Coot Hill, the distance is apparently 5 miles, 7 furlongs.
And with a furlong to go, it's Badger Set from Black and All Black. Badger Set coming up the inside, and then Black and All Black is making a comeback on the outside rail, just on Badger Set there. And it's Badger Set from Black and All Black, but Black and All Black is coming back, and Black and All Black is going to take it at the post by a length. It's Black and All Black from Badger Set.
Horse racing and map making may not necessarily be two things that we place together very, very easily. Why would we be doing that in the case of the 18th century?
Well, I think this map of County Kildare is rather unique because it shows a horse race that took place on the Curra on September the 5th, 1751. And as the description elaborates, it was for 1,000 guineas between a horse named Black and All Black, belonging to the Honourable Sir Ralph Gore, and a horse named Badgeset, the property of the Right Honourable the Earl of March. And in fact, it tells us that the Black and All Black horse won with ease. And this is an illustration that appears on the map of County Kildare that was made by John Noble and James Keenan in 1752, the year after that race.
So the fact that they would have something that was so contemporary tells us in some ways what they were trying to do with the maps themselves. They were trying to bring things absolutely up to date.
Yeah, I think they were trying to bring out the fact that they had, for the first time since the Down Survey, made a new map of County Kildare that is containing up-to-date roads information, for instance, up-to-date information on the big houses, that is based on a completely new survey that postdates Petty.
One of the problems with the Petty survey, of course, was when he came to making his county maps, it was only forfeited lands that he had taken detail of. Whereas in this case, we are dealing with all sorts of detail. Didn't matter what the land was, it was all surveyed.
Yeah, this map is trying to show as much as possible consistent with the scale at which it has been produced. So it shows the location of the roads, the big houses, the rivers and streams, and features like windmills, water mills, churches and chapels.
In fact, there's one, I don't know this road in County Kildare, I don't know if you do or not, that's absolutely straight. There's not a single turn on it. Does it exist?
Well, this is one of the rather unusual features about this map. It's the road from Clane through Allenwood to Ballinagar in County Offaly. It was originally intended to be 14 miles straight. In fact, only 7 miles was built from Clane westwards as far as Lullymore, and the rest of it was never really completed, or at least if it was completed, it didn't last very long. What Noble and Keenan were trying to do was to be really up to date and show the roads even before they had been built.
Dublin, the 5th of September, 1754. John Roke, cartographer to His Royal Highness the Prince of Wales, being solicited by many of the nobility and gentry of the Kingdom of Ireland to survey and publish by subscription a map of the capital in all respects like those of London, Paris, etc., is now executing it in great forwardness to a scale of 200 feet in 1 inch, so that the true ground plot of all public buildings, streets, lanes, courts, alleys, etc., will therein be expressed with the boundary of the city and the other liberties contiguous. By which the public, as well as foreigners who have so long been at a loss, may see the beautiful situation and large extent of this metropolis, and be thereby undeceived.
While the 18th century Ireland then was quite disparate, there was one major figure who really moved things along in a whole new way, and that was John Roke.
Roke was an outsider, Anglo-French in origins. He came to Ireland in 1754. He'd already mapped a number of European cities, Rome, Paris, London in 24 sheets. He was really a state-of-the-art figure. He was the leading cartographer in Britain probably at that time, possibly the leading cartographer in Europe. And he came to Ireland apparently at the request of leading citizens of Dublin to make a map of Dublin.
The map that he made of the city tells a story of the city itself, the capital city, at a point when it was about to change.
Dublin at that time had a population of about 100,000. It was growing quite fast, but it was to grow even faster in the next few decades. And Roke's maps are of particular significance, partly because of their detail and their accuracy, and partly because they catch a view of Dublin on the edge of this expansion phase. In particular, they catch a view of Dublin just before the far-reaching activities of the Wide Streets Commissioners, who gave Dublin many of the streets that we know so well today.
Well, for example, when I look at the map, Sackville Street, the upper end of what is now O'Connell Street, looks very much like the current version of the upper part of O'Connell Street. But below it is Drogheda Street, which doesn't even reach the river at Bachelor's Walk. There is no bridge, and there's a lot of detail in around that area that's very different from the modern map.
Yeah, on this map we see on the north side of the city the estate of the Earl of Drogheda, which is distinguished by the street names Henry Street, Moore Street, Earl Street, and there's even a small lane called Of Lane. So we have Henry Moore, Earl of Drogheda, being immortalised in street names. But as you say, we don't have a link across the river at this point. Essex Bridge at that time, Capel Street Bridge, was the lowest crossing point, and there was no O'Connell Bridge, or what is now known as O'Connell Bridge.
And of course, beside Essex Bridge then at that time was the Custom House, because that would be as far as the ships could travel.
Yeah, ships were quite small and they could come up river, at least in normal circumstances, as far as Capel Street Bridge.
The city that John Roke mapped as well, Arnold, is a much smaller city than the one we know today.
You could probably walk across it in less than an hour, possibly even in half an hour. It wouldn't have extended much more than about a mile radius from the river.
So on the south side of the city, for example, Stephen's Green is at the very edge.
Yeah, Stephen's Green is at the edge. Watts Leeson Street stops about just a short distance up from Stephen's Green. It's called the Road to Donnybrook, and it's all countryside from there on out. Merrion Street represents the edge of the city at that point, and just to the west of Merrion Street, between Kildare Street and Merrion Street, is the newly built Kildare House and Gardens, which are the Earl of Kildare's town residence, which again are state-of-the-art, built by the architect Richard Castle.
So that is the Houses of Parliament, Leinster House, that we know
today.
That's
what's now the Houses of Parliament. Of course, at that period, the Parliament House was where the Bank of Ireland on College Green is today.
On the north side of the city, then, we know we're at the edge of the map. In fact, we know we're at the edge of the world because we're on World's End Lane. Where is that?
World's End Lane is now called Foley Street, and in an earlier existence, of course, was part of the Monto district at the beginning of the 20th century. World's End Lane leads on to the Strand. The Strand is where Amiens Street is now, and at that time it was just on the edge of the city. In fact, the area where Amiens Street station is had recently been reclaimed as part of the North's Lots reclamation scheme.
And Roke himself as a map maker, this was only one of the map making projects in which he was involved.
He spent 6 years in Ireland, and during those 6 years he produced a number of versions of the Dublin city map. There's a single sheet version, there's a large four sheet version. He also produced a large map of County Dublin in four sheets. It's again highly innovative. He produced a map of County Armagh. He produced printed maps of Cork, Kilkenny and Thurles. And then he went on at the same time as doing all this to produce a marvellous series of estate maps for the Earl of Kildare.
Lord Kildare, who is one of the greatest improvers in Ireland, has, at an expense of some £100, had his estate surveyed and curious maps made of his lands at Carton Manuth and that part of the kingdom. He proposes to set his lands at a reasonable rate to each tenant, as in England, and to divide it into farms from 80 to 200 acres, except odd pieces which may serve for labourers and cottagers.
When I look at this John Roach estate map, part of County Kildare then, for example, Arnold, I think back to the one we looked at earlier, which was very blank, had a very ornate cartouche, but apart from that, there wasn't much really to see on it. This one could easily be an aerial photograph of the estate because it's so beautiful. It's a work of art.
Yeah, it's an attempt to represent the entire landscape in a way that no land surveyor had previously attempted. And what Roach does is to produce a map in colour. That's the first point, perhaps. But he also tries to show within the boundaries of each townland the fields, the roads, the houses, and not just the big houses, but the small houses, the outhouses, the cabins of the labourers, as well as the landowners or the big farmers. And he's showing the land use as well. He's showing what type of field boundary, whether it's a fence or a ditch. He's showing whether the fields themselves are in tillage or whether they're in pasture or whether they're boggy or whether there's an area of woodland or an orchard to be found in this particular townland. So we get a very comprehensive picture of the contents of a small patch of Ireland 80 years before the Ordnance Survey attempted something similar.
And the minute we look at the map, we can see the uses of the land. Because of the colour, as you mentioned, the green fields will tell us probably that it's pasture, and the arable fields look essentially like representations of a ploughed field.
They do, and he carries this to enormous detail. We see practically every tree, possibly every tree that is in this townland. Sometimes we see a fence with a large number of trees planted along them. Sometimes we see fences where the trees are much more scattered and random. Overall, we get this picture of the landscape that allows us to, perhaps allows local historians to get a sense of the local economy in a way that no other set of maps has offered us the opportunity to do previously. The long period of limited direct government involvement in Irish cartography is really brought to an end by the cataclysmic events of 1798, because that forced a reassessment in a whole range of ways. The most obvious one is the Act of Union in 1800. For the British government, another aspect of 1798 was that they got a huge fright about the possibilities of communicating within Ireland and between Ireland and Britain. They realised that their communication systems were poor and that they needed immediate improvement. So a series of measures were put in place to allow more direct communication and more rapid communication. One of these was what is shown on this particular map of 1804, the system of signal towers that were built along the coast. Most coastal parts of Ireland have these rather prominent square towers to be used to signal to ships and to obtain signals from ships using some sort of semaphore system of signalling.
So when we look around the coast of Ireland on this map from 1804, there are little red flags right around it, essentially, but very notable on the southern and western coasts, as I suppose they would have been the points that people expected invasion to happen.
There's a flag, for instance, on Valentia Island. There's one just to the south of it at Bolas Head. There's another one at the end of the Beira Peninsula. So these signal towers were quite closely spaced and would have been the first means of relaying information.
15th of May, 1809. Whereas there are large tracts of undrained bog in Ireland, the drainage whereof is necessary for their being brought into a state of tillage, and whereas the adding their contents to the lands already under cultivation would not only increase the agriculture of Ireland and contribute much to its resources for the sustenance of the British Empire and its profitable export of corn, but is highly expedient towards promoting a secure supply of flax and hemp within the United Kingdom for the use of the navy and support of the linen manufacture. Be it therefore enacted by the King's Most Excellent Majesty that commissioners shall be and are hereby appointed for ascertaining the extent of all such bogs in Ireland.
Another government response to the internal and external crisis of the early 1800s was to establish what were known as the Bogs Commissioners of 1809 to 1814. Well, the Bogs Commissioners produced 40 to 50 maps covering large parts of the country, and that's their enduring legacy. But the reasons for the Bogs Commissioners being established are rather different to what one might imagine. There was certainly the issue of draining bogland, but the immediate issue was the threat from Napoleon that the supplies of raw materials to Great Britain would be cut off. The British government found that one of its most vital supplies, hemp, which was needed for sailcloth for the navy, was being threatened. As part of its panic reaction to that threat, it decided drained bogland was a particularly good location for growing large quantities of hemp locally. So there was a political imperative to draining the bogs that was in the interests of the British government, that it needed sailcloth for the navy.
Who were the people that carried out these map-making projects for the Bog Commission?
The Bogs Commissioners were a group of about 10 or 12 government-appointed individuals who would coordinate the whole project. They then employed 10 engineers who were assigned particular parts of Ireland, and that these engineers were then responsible for making detailed maps of the districts to which they had been assigned.
Alexander Nimmo then would have been one of these engineers, and this map that we're looking at of part of County Kerry from 1811 shows that he was a very diligent map maker. Lots of detail there that perhaps wouldn't have been expected from him.
Yeah, Nimmo is a very interesting and unusual character in this scheme, because he came to Ireland specially to make maps for the Bogs Commissioners. And as you can see, this map shows far more than the bogs. It shows very vividly the physical features of the area, the mountainous nature of the area, the cut-off nature of this barony. It shows a rural landscape. He shows the roads and the road system before the Ring Road was built, the Ring of Kerry Road that many of us now know quite well. He shows Valentia Island before the principal village of Knightstown was built. He's showing Waterville when it was simply a house, and he shows various other features across this map, like the Catholic chapel at Master Gichy, which he spells Master G-I-C-H-Y Gichy, which perhaps betrays his Scottish origins.
When these Bogs Commissioners' maps were completed, they couldn't be combined in any shape or form, could they?
There was an attempt to relate the survey measurements back to the recently built Nelson's Pillar in Dublin, which was seen as being a possible sort of base point for all the maps from which all the measurements would be related. But that proved to be far too difficult in the time available. So what we have is a series of 40 or 50 maps covering quite large parts of the country, groups of them do join up, but we never get a joined up map of the whole of Ireland, and we never get a full impression of the extent of bogland in Ireland from these maps.
The joining up was something that would come later in the 19th century.
Within a decade of the end of the Bogs Commissioners, the Ordnance Survey had been established at the Phoenix Park in 1824, and that was the start of the detailed 6 inches to 1 mile joined up map of Ireland that would require 1,900 sheets to produce the joined up map.